What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, DJs, studio artists, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 a month, and even their top tier is just $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners and viewers 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. That link will give you 30% off that first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and cannot thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Puff Coffee. Puff is one of my favorite coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. They've got a location off 28th and Stark in Southeast. Their coffee is delicious, and everyone that works there is always super friendly. I had the pleasure of staying in their neighborhood for a month or so, and it was just a real treat to have this as my neighborhood coffee shop for a bit. And now I find myself going out of my way to get over there and get some coffee. Puff Coffee was started by the founder of Stumptown Coffee, and they are making small batch coffee roasted daily here in Portland. Their mission: to find, roast, and deliver the most delicious coffees anywhere. Their small batch process means that they get to keep things interesting with experimental blends and single origin gems while always keeping the classics on deck. They've got a variety of beans to choose from, and if you're not in the Portland area, you can order their small batch coffee straight to your home through their website, and you can use the coupon code DANCABLE, all one word, for 20% off a coffee subscription. Links for Puff Coffee will be in the episode notes. Big thanks to Puff for supporting the show and for their amazing small batch coffee. Now let's get into the episode.
Look down at the recording of some of the things I was going to say. Fall down, down.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. If you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so, and that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, which will give it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from, or if you're watching on YouTube, go ahead, hit subscribe there. Give it 5 stars on Spotify if that's where you're tuning in from. Check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping every first of the month. Those are available on Spotify, pretty spread out genre-wise, and just a snapshot of what I'm listening to throughout the month. Things that are making it into my DJ sets, 40 tracks every first of the month. The March one is there now, and the links for those will be in the episode notes. Stoked to get into episode 401 of the podcast. Thank you to everybody that checked out the 400th episode. That was a big one for me, and just kind of launching all this video element of things into play. And if you didn't tune into 400 yet, it is a retrospective on the podcast hosted by my friend Ayal. We did the deep dive on me. I was kind of the I was the guest for that one, and it was a really cool opportunity to reflect back on the last 8 years of the show. So big thanks to AL for taking the time to do that with me, and thank you to everybody that checked it out. Definitely you know, go back, cruise through that one, and excited to get in to episode 401 with Portland-based musician and songwriter Mickey Newball. This was such a fun chat. I had been DMing with Mickey for the last couple months or so, trying to find a time to link up for this. I stumbled upon his music recently and just kind of fell in love with the songwriting. So it was great to get to hang with him. I got to see him play this Songwriters in the Round put on by PDX Songwriters maybe a couple months back or a month or so ago, and it was cool to see him play some tunes in the live setting and hear some of his storytelling along with the tunes. And yeah, this was just a great hang with this dude. We probably chatted for another hour or so after we were after we wrapped the podcast, and I just love his songwriting, and he's got this really great record called Genie Plus Organ, which is available on all the things wherever you listen to music, and we dive into that a bit during this chat, as well as Mickey's music background. So big thanks to Mickey Newball for jumping on the mics with me, cruising through the studio, and for the hang. I really dug this one, and also happy with how things are looking video wise. It's a little bit different already from episode 400. If you tuned into that one, you'll notice some lighting differences. So let me know what you think of that, and give Mickey Newball a follow on all the things if you enjoy this chat and enjoy the tunes. And if you're in the Portland, Oregon area, there's a few opportunities to see Mickey play some live sets coming up real soon, including this week, March 9th, over at the Fixin' 2, and then March 16th at the Starday Tavern, really great dive bar in the Foster neighborhood in Southeast Portland. And April 20th, 420, bro, Mickey Newball's playing the Landmark Saloon with former guest of the podcast, Johnny Franco, and his real brother, Dom. That was a really fun chat with those dudes. We got very, very buttered for that one. It took us a while to find our way on the Johnny Franco episode, but we got to the root of things. So you can go back and check out that episode from sometime last year. That was a great chat, and all the links for Mickey Newball will be in the episode notes. You can also find my email there if you want to email the show. Let me know what you're listening to. Let me know who you want to hear on this thing. And with all that, we are going to get into episode 401 of the podcast with Mickey Newball. And to play us into the episode, we're going to kick it off with a track called Limbo off that Genie Plus Organ record. Let's do the damn thing.
Tell me what's so wrong. What's so wrong?
So what is that thing?
I'm experimenting with knickknacks as far as the table.
Oh, I couldn't see. It's a truck.
It's a Zamboni. Do you know what a Zamboni is?
Yes, here. Can you? I don't know. For
this here is a Zamboni.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So from the back, it was hard to. I don't know if I would have got.
Sense.
I don't know if I would have got that. It was.
You know
Zamboni.
What this device does, though?
Yeah, yeah. It does it clean the ice? It just preps the ice hockey and.
Yeah.
Ice skating.
Yeah.
What does it actually do? It shaves a layer off.
It basically. I'm gonna look really dumb with this situation. I should know, but it. Basically just like cuts the ice so that it's a smooth layer. Because after skating on it, especially like in the pros, like they just absolutely destroy the ice.
Yeah.
So after each period, they resurface the ice.
Is it spraying? I'm gonna grill you on Zambonis. Does it spray a new layer of water down?
It's actively laying down water.
It's adding
and
ice.
Cutting the ice.
Yeah.
At the same time.
It's like if a lawnmower was laying down sod and then cutting it immediately.
Dude, I'm gonna get so many fucking comments of it, like, this guy's a fucking idiot. He likes hockey and doesn't know anything about how the Zamboni actually works.
I don't think hockey fans. That's not a prerequisite for knowing things about hockey.
I feel like, I don't know, I pride myself in knowing so much about the game, though. It is my goal, Mickey, to learn how to drive a Zamboni, though.
Oh.
I would love to do that.
Oh. Well, you should start with one of those vehicle lawnmowers. That would be a good...
Vehicle?
You know, the ones that you drive.
Yeah.
I think that's
like
a good...
John Deere?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just invest.
If we're getting into brands, yeah, you get a big yard. Because how do you? So I'm gonna keep going on the same. Yeah, how do you get it? How do you fall into that job? You can't. There's no way to.
You just work at the ice rink.
Yeah.
You get a job at the ice rink, and then somebody has to learn how to cut the ice. I've seen these kids out there. They're like 16 years old, driving the Zamboni. I'm sure it's.
I would imagine too that it's like. You do that for 40 years. There's a guy that does it, and he does it until he retires, right? And then
the
young buck takes over.
Yeah, and there's definitely, like, Zamboni fail clips all over of people just smashing into the boards, which destroys the glass and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. But it's going so slow.
It's a wild world, you know? But that's Zambonis.
I like it.
That's Zambonis for you, and I'm experimenting with knickknacks and my buddy Bert, you know?
Okay. A
longtime supporter and friend of the cast, childhood friend, gave me this Zamboni, and I feel like this is maybe going to be its home for a little
bit. It's very nice.
You know, I just want to bring some character to the table.
Yeah, yeah.
I told you we're only on like the second episode of having a full film production.
Yeah,
here,
and I'm honored.
I'm super excited to have you here. I've been listening to your music quite a bit. Genie Plus Organ. Is the most recent record. I've been listening to that quite a bit, and
it's the only record.
I kind of just like fell for your songwriting pretty quickly, man.
Thanks.
I'm really excited to talk to you. I know when you got here, you were talking about how you haven't really like listened to this podcast, so you don't know what you're in for. And no. I've always tried to not like read too much if there is any like information on the guest, because I don't want to ask questions I know the answers to.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm excited to get to know you through this conversation. I've only had your music as reference, and then I got to see you play that Songwriters in the Round.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Thing at
Alberta.
Street Pub, which is often, I don't know, such a great way for me to get exposed to somebody's music in the live setting for the first time. I've always appreciated getting to hear the storytelling aspects, and that's such a good setting for that. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, talk to me about where you grew up and like what was the vibe of the upbringing.
Well, I grew up in San Diego in Encinitas. Encinitas.
Yeah, not too far away from where I grew up.
Where did you grow up?
Corona, California.
Corona. Okay, I could tell by your accent. I can hear the Southern California accent now, which I have too. I played drums for a long time. Started in high school. I don't like San Diego, by the way.
You don't like it.
I don't like it. I hated it growing up.
What did you not like about it?
Well, for people when they hear I'm from Encinitas, they think I live on, I don't, for your listeners that know Encinitas, they think like I, you know, on the 101, like I'm right on the beach or something. I grew up in the inland part of Encinitas, east of the 5. So it wasn't like, you know, Beach Boys every day. And I don't want to shit on San Diego too much, but culturally, I don't really find it appealing. I kind of like, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. I didn't like it very much.
Okay.
But I think that was a good thing in the long run. Like I think it shaped me a lot, and I was into like, I became a drummer in high school.
That was your first instrument?
First instrument. Yeah.
What drew you to the drums?
Just the physicalness of it, I think.
Okay.
I think also like I had friends that were becoming musicians and they needed a drummer, and so it looked glamorous.
Yeah.
It still does. I still feel that way.
It's the instrument I always wanted to learn to play.
It's
like when
really
I first
fun.
Got into music, I was I want to be a drummer for sure.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing about it is it's a pain in the ass to haul around.
Yeah.
But still to this day, I'm like, I think I have a more of an appreciation for drumming now, having like played other instruments and then come back to it. I really like it.
Yeah. I would also, I always think that that's got to be such a valuable foundational instrument to start on.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
informing. I don't know. When I think about your music and think about the deep grooves, I guess, you know, thinking about like a track like Sleepyhead.
Oh, yeah.
Which was maybe one of the first songs I heard of yours. Immediately, I'm able to fall into that groove.
Yeah.
And I got to imagine, you know, the drumming helped inform those types of things and creating that kind of pocket.
Sure. Yeah. I would say so. Yeah. Ironically, that song's the only one that has like MIDI drums yeah. on it. But
it's still like coming through the yeah, lens of yeah. where you started.
I don't know. I mean, I've departed. In high school, it was like double kick. Like I was into like metal and hardcore and metalcore
yes,
and
dude.
That kind of
yes.
stuff.
What were you
see,
listening
to? See, you're from Corona. You know this. So I have a story about Corona.
Did you go to the Showcase Theater?
No, I think I went to, is Glass Box? Is that?
The Glass House.
Glass House.
So that's Pomona.
Pomona.
And that is the neighboring
okay.
town to
right.
Corona.
Okay. I was not too far off.
Yeah.
Glass Box and Corona.
The Glass
like,
Box and Corona. Sick.
yeah, but I have this. So I was really into. Do you know? this is embarrassing, but did you know band Poison the Well?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I was really into Poison the Well.
Yeah, I bet we're gonna. You're gonna name a band, and I'm gonna be like, Mickey. This vinyl is in this room. There's Under Oath. There's Thrice. It's all here.
Oh yeah. I mean, Thrice. I think is still. I think Thrice is still.
It's one of my favorite bands of all time.
Yeah, they're great. So I remember one time, I don't even know what it, this is, you know, like 20 years ago in the internet days. So like the drummer of Poison the Well, posted like an ad, like, hey, I'm giving drum lessons.
Okay.
And me and my friend were big Poison the Well fans. He was also a drummer. And he was like, oh my God, the guy, I think his name is Chris, is giving lessons. And this is when I used to think like every musician that had an album or record, I'm like, they're all millionaires. Like the
Dude,
drummer,
right?
the bassist, the triangle player, whatever they are.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I was very much the same.
Yeah.
It hasn't been until really getting involved in doing the podcast and kind of getting involved in maybe some of the industry side things in the last 8 years or so that I've realized that there is like a middle ground, like there are the
sure.
lower to middle class musicians who
yeah.
are like just getting by doing the thing quietly, and it's not everyone is like a rock star or nothing,
yeah,
you know, and like you're saying, you know, I think your response to finding out that your friend gets signed to a record label, you immediately think this is it for them.
Yeah,
you know, they're
yeah.
blown up.
Yeah.
But even being on a major record label, you could still be playing empty shows and
sure,
not be making any money.
Well, and this guy was in a hardcore band, which is, I don't know, whatever Poison the Well is, metalcore, I don't know what you call it. But so, which is like in itself, like kind of a niche genre.
Right.
And he's a drummer, so he's not like getting, he's probably not getting writing credits, right? Or royalties for writing. So, but anyway, he posts this thing like, I'm giving drum lessons. And they were like $40 an hour. Not like back then. Now that's probably, I don't know, $80 an hour. But it was not like, it wasn't insane.
Okay.
But he lived in Corona.
Yeah.
And so me and my friend drove, we signed up for a drum lesson. And from Encinitas, this is like an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah. yeah.
When you're like 16, that's a huge.
It's a journey.
It was ridiculous, and I'm wearing my Poison the Well shirt, and I remember he had like this, he was in one of those like little townhouses where they're like townhouse duplexes,
yeah,
and it's in his garage, and he's got his drum set, and he's like, well, okay, well, like, show me what you can do, and I started playing, I'm trying to remember the song, like 12-23-93, I feel like it was the name of the song was like a date.
Okay. And but this is a Poison the Well song.
This is a Poison the Well song.
You played his song?
And I did it so wrong. Like, I didn't. And I was like, is that how it goes? And he's like, no, dude. And then he corrected me. But it was really fun. But anyway, that was an interesting experience. Driving, yeah. really far to meet this drummer who was like, I loved, that was one of my favorite bands. And that was, that drummer was like my favorite drummer.
Yeah. So, lots of double kick blast beats that you were playing.
I don't know if it was blast beats, but it was a lot of double kick.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was that mostly what you were listening to as well? Or were you like always listening to like a pretty wide range of stuff?
No, in high school I was into that stuff, and like later on I didn't grow up in a you know, my mom was playing like maybe Michael Jackson, but like Paula Abdul and yeah. Madonna. I grew up with like
music.
A single mom. And it was like pop music of her generation, okay. So it's like generations back. So no, I didn't like the early memories of the Beatles was, I don't know if you remember this. I don't know if you're this around the same age as me, but like, do you remember those commercials where there was like, it would be like, oh, they're hits. And it has the yellow writing with the blue screen.
Yeah.
And it would be like, I remember the Beatles one, cause I didn't know who the Beatles were. And it'd be like 5 seconds of a song, be like, damn, it's been a hard day. And then it would go like something, you know, and then yeah. it would go to the next one.
Yeah, yeah. And all those other compilations too.
Yeah. But so all the kind of like old stuff, the vintage stuff, like 60s and 70s stuff, I got to in like college.
Okay.
Way later. So,
I mean, yeah, I think I don't know, my time with spending a lot of time listening to the Beatles catalog even wasn't even until I moved up here like 10 years ago in my late 20s. I just
yeah.
wasn't listening to too much of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but so were you playing shows in this band, like high school band and in the hardcore scene? Was there not tons of shows though?
No, not tons of shows, but a lot of practicing. But not a lot of shows. I think like more the shows started more in college, still drumming.
Okay.
Yeah.
You loved it though, like the drums?
Yeah, yeah.
You, like,
I mean,
spent a lot of your free time playing drums by
yeah,
choice?
Yeah, and then like started kind of writing stuff. But still mostly as a drummer, like I kind of started to learn some theory.
Okay.
And like could get by on the keys, like enough to sort of like rudimentarily like execute ideas and stuff. I couldn't like sit down and play Bach chorales or anything, but I
you could use it as a songwriting tool.
Yeah, I had like a little bit of a melodic outlet.
And then there's like also the percussive elements of the keys a bit.
Sure. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know. So what did like writing as a drummer look like for you? Like when you were starting to explore songwriting?
Well, it started out, I've always been like singing as a kid and stuff. I've always sang. So, I think I would be in bands where I would sing one song in the set or something, and then that led to like I started singing lead in bands where I'm drumming.
Okay.
And then I would have like writing partners, you know, like guitarists and stuff, where I'd be like, do this, do, do, do. And I would just sort of mouth it.
Yeah.
And I would kind of work. I worked like that for a long time, all the while kind of getting slowly a little bit better at playing keys.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense that you were, you know, you were going to get better at that as you like worked on songwriting more.
Yeah. And getting good at like drawing in MIDI. Like I couldn't play, a lot of my ideas, but I knew enough about theory at this point. I was like kind of a music minor for a little while in college. And so I could like go into GarageBand. At this time it was GarageBand for me, but, and like draw the chords that I wanted. I knew what the chords were and stuff. And so I could send other musicians ideas that way.
what was like that process of you learning how to sing and play drums at the same time? Was that a whole ordeal, or did it come pretty naturally?
I don't remember it being like a like this is I'm gonna learn this year. I think it kind of happened organically. People often like, for whatever reason, that seems like it's kind of like a novelty. Every time somebody sees you do a set and you're singing lead and playing drums, they're like, oh my god, like how do you do that? Like, it's like Levon Helm, Phil Collins, they always say that, or what's the Eagles guy, Don Henley,
absolutely,
get that. And then
my boy Phil,
yeah, I like Levon as my, I was in a band, cover band, but we'll talk about that later. But
noted.
But I think it's way harder to play. I think bass is the hardest one to sing and,
really?
And play, because I don't know, with guitar it's pretty natural, and then with drums you're playing through. I'm not explaining this very well, but with bass there's a lot of space, so you're singing and you're playing this bass line, and they have to, it's almost like counterpoint, like, oh, you have okay. to do this like delicate dance where you're like, okay, this note I'm singing lands on this bass accent, but then there's ones that are, so it's more disjointed.
Yeah.
I don't know, I went on a tangent there. I don't know if I.
No. Yeah. So like after you got your, you know, taking some interest in playing keys and writing songs, were you always kind of slowly picking up other instruments just so you could facilitate your ideas?
I would say there was a point where I was I think this is a common thing with drummers, where like you sort of get sick of like backing other people's visions. I was getting sick of it. I was like, I don't want to always be in the back. I don't want to, like, I have writing ideas.
Yeah.
And so I started to learn keys kind of more intentionally.
Okay.
And then like, I don't know, maybe it hasn't even been that long. It's been maybe like 4 years since I started playing guitar. So it's pretty new. I always kind of envied. I had friends that, like, you know, I would drum for, but then I would see them play solo sets and they would tell stories like you were saying. And it was like really engaging, and I could see them charming the audience. And I coveted that autonomy, because with drums, you're always, it's always a team sport.
Yeah. You're just kind of one of the players. In the band. Even if you are the main songwriter.
Yeah.
Maybe people don't know that,
which is great and beautiful, and I've come to like love that even more now. But I like the idea of being able to not rely on anyone else if I need to, like I can go play a set on my own,
yeah,
and make it entertaining and engaging for an audience, and that's why I switched from keys to guitar. It's because it's like portable and simple, and just, I don't know, there's just like a simplicity and elegance to it that I like.
Yeah, you can play it on the street corner,
you can play it on the Max.
You can travel with it like pretty easily instead of a keyboard, or like assuming that there's a keyboard somewhere where you're playing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes
sense. And I wanted to stand for once in my life. I'm not a big fan of the standing keyboard thing, so
yeah.
I wanted to stand.
So, like, when you were playing in these bands in college, was it, like, a little more rock and roll type music? Or, like, what kind of music was it?
It slowly... There was a couple that I was in for a while. So, one was this kind of, like, prog metal band. I think, like, all that metal stuff led into, like, prog, which, like, way more melodic. I've always liked classical and stuff, so
yeah,
it led into that. And then I was like really into the Mars Volta in college, and then that led into this, like, it was like a almost like a this is one where I was singing lead. It was like a psychedelic rock kind of surf rock band with some like Latin stuff in there and stuff, and that was really fun.
And is this when is this your time spent in Santa Cruz?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where you went to college?
Yeah.
And did that, do you think overall environment just had a lot of influence on what was happening musically for you, or like what you were getting exposed to?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of, there's a lot of great musicians still there. But I think even more back then because it wasn't as expensive. So it was like affordable for artists. So I, you know, I lived there for a long time after I graduated.
Okay.
And there's a good scene there. And I, you know, people I still play with to this day. Yeah. And then I, you know, I got into like all the, I'm obsessed with like, I just like old stuff mostly.
Yeah.
Like 60s, 70s stuff.
Okay.
Like I would say 60 to 70% 60s and 70s.
But that discovery came like maybe a little bit later for you, like as started far as like really leaning into that.
Yeah, it started in college, and then now I'm just like full tilt into that stuff. But it was always there. It was just like I wasn't exposed to it. Like it spoke to me like immediately once I kind of found it.
Yeah. What do you think you are drawn to about that music that was recorded so long ago?
I think there's more character in it, and there's more craftsmanship. At least in the pop world. And I think like I mean I listen to a lot of modern indie and stuff like that, but I think just like the nature of the way we listen to music now with like Spotify and all this stuff, I think there's like more, it's an environment set up like where there's a lot of just copycat, like chasing trends kind of more. And so, which I used to think, I mean, I think it's a bad thing as a listener, but I think as an artist, it's actually a good thing because it's easier to stand out. If you have the, like, this is going to sound so pretentious. If you have the courage to be yourself. No, but I think, yeah, like there's more music. Like it's been, in certain ways, it's been like democratized. Like anyone can now record an album at home and
anybody can start a podcast.
But I think that's a great thing. But I think, I think there's a lot of that in of itself, like people don't, like I think there's a lot of musicians that will whatever make an album and put it on Spotify, but maybe they're not like as nerdy about the music part of it, about the songwriting or whatever. And like I think that shows, at least I know.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, because if you wanted to put music out, you don't necessarily have to dedicate a lot of time to put music out.
Yeah.
If you don't want to.
Yeah. So I think it's easier.
I think they're, because you don't have to like go to some professional recording studio if you don't want to, and you don't have to dump all those resources into that. Like if you know, especially if you know how to facilitate your own recording sessions, your own bedroom stuff or whatever you're,
which is a great thing though.
Yeah. I think you're right though, is that you're getting, you know, maybe more saturation because of that, and you're getting more people who are just saying, oh, I want to try this thing, I'm gonna do it, but maybe don't have a lot of dedication to the craft.
Yeah, I mean, I'm walking a fine line here, because I think that's a great thing. I think that's a great thing that like it's more accessible to everyone, but the sea of shit is bigger, basically. Yeah. But I don't want to, at the same time, I don't want to like intimidate people into not pursuing it. But to me, this is all the tangent of like, why do you like this stuff? To me, like this, I think I can, a lot of times I can hear when the care and craft is there. Now I'm just ranting.
Do you think it's like an authenticity thing that you can like feel in the music or in the songwriting?
With that 60s and 70s stuff? Yeah, but I guess there's a lot of shit in the 60s and 70s that I just don't listen to, and it's forgotten to time. So I don't know. Maybe my argument is moot, but I don't know. Yeah, I shouldn't What do I? What the fuck do I know? I'm just one guy.
What did your? What was your music like before you started maybe putting out those first few singles a few years ago? Like, what did the early songwriting when you started playing your music?
It was sillier.
And you stepped out behind the drums. Like, yeah, what was the vibe of that stuff?
Well, it changed. It changed. I don't want to name any specific bands because I don't want people to look them up. But like that surf rocky kind of one. It was like silly and like satirical.
Okay.
And almost like bad taste lyrically, but it was supposed to be. It was kind of a joke. So that stuff was sillier.
Yeah.
And more tongue in cheek.
But you really enjoyed like the aspect of writing lyrics.
I think the lyric writing in that band was definitely like backseat. It was secondary. Okay. It was more about like, I think we were more about the live performance because it was like a big party thing. And
it's a party band creating a fun experience.
Yeah. We were more about rocking.
When do you maybe start spending time writing things that are maybe more introspective or self-reflective, or maybe using lyrics as like this tool to process the world or your feelings?
I think when I started getting into that, to just more into that kind of music, because I think you know, in terms of music, like musicality, like chord writing, chord progressions, mm-hmm. melody, it's actually like pretty finite. There's not a lot you can do. It's almost like I was gonna say it's almost like chess, but I'm like, isn't there? There's more moves in chess than there are like atoms in the universe. So that's not a good. No, it's pretty finite. Like you could do. I don't know if you know. Music theory, but like you could do like a 12 bar blues song, right?
Okay.
12 bar blues has been done, oh my God, 500 million times. There's probably recorded more than that, billions times. But what's different about each version of those? It's the lyrical content.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the delivery, the way that they emote. It's the feel, it's the groove. It's like that kind of thing. So I think you can express a lot more in lyrical ideas than you can even in sort of chord progressions or melodies. And like, yeah, like a good lyric line, like look at Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan's not chord progression wise. It's all really simple, but
not the greatest singer either.
I mean, I love it now. Yeah, I mean, he's one of my favorites.
But not like a gift, like not someone you would look to as like this dude.
But those are the guys that are often, those are the most kind of riveting singers, I think.
Because it's all like feel and like emotion.
Yeah, and he just he says it with such, he sings it with such conviction.
Mm-hmm.
That it's even the silly stuff, even like, I don't know how familiar, like Nashville Skyline, like, oh, tonight I'll be, when he quit smoking and his voice was
like this.
So there's just a lot more you can do with lyrics.
Yeah.
And I started hanging out with people that I was like, oh, like they had stronger lyrics. I've played with people on both sides of the spectrum of like ones that are like lyrics don't matter, and the other side that's like, you know, it's just different games they're playing. You
spending
know?
A lot of time like crafting lyrics as well.
Yeah.
But did it always feel like pretty comfortable for you to like personally express yourself that way when you did get deeper into the songwriting?
I think so. I think I've always liked writing, and I used to write like little limericks. Like I had weird things about like weird silly things. Like I had one about a chef of flesh, like a cannibal, and I had like a snake charmer. They were like these like kind of this is in like college too. Like little limericks about characters. I always kind of like that stuff. But I don't personally think that my lyrics are particularly like I'm not that vulnerable. I don't think. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I am. I don't know. But
I think like what I love about your lyrics is, and especially seeing you just play that stripped down solo set at Street Pub that night in the Songwriters and the Round Deal, is it feels like to me that I get a lot of your personality coming through
yeah,
in your songs.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
Listening to you talk that night about the songs and then listening to you sing your songs, it feels like it's the same person.
Well, I hope so. You know? It is.
Well, it's. I mean, I don't think it like always like works out that way. And
sure.
Not to say one is more authentic than the other. I think there's like different things call for different,
yeah,
you know, voicings and whatnot. But when I like listen to your music, I feel like, oh, this is that dude. And like the 15 minutes we spent bullshitting before we, you know, turned the mics on, you know, I was just
yeah.
like, oh, this is this dude, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah.
Like when it reflects the same thing,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
it feels like there's as much, there's like these comedic elements to your storytelling
sure.
through the songs.
Sure.
And then I, you know, learn that you're a fan of stand-ups and maybe
yeah, yeah.
maybe one of these musicians that wanted to be a stand-up or something.
Oh
like,
yeah. Well, that's yeah.
Has that always been like kind of a thing for you, or just maybe just admiring comics?
Well, I'll say this, like I appreciate that. That's very kind of you to say. I think it's especially in that context, like where it's in the songwriters thing where it's like a listening room, and you, because sometimes I'll play sets and it's like a noisy bar and like I can't be like, this song is about
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. Like
you,
nobody,
you know your spot,
no, nobody
to do
gives
that.
A shit, like you, you have to play to the rooms, so you
right.
have to strategize like, okay, I need to like be just more rocking, and they don't, like tonight lyrics don't matter and the story doesn't matter, but when it does, I've found that this all is pretty new, that storytelling kind of thing, and I'm playing guitar solo. I found that like when I'm honest and you know, speak with candor and just like, and also like don't censor myself, like don't be like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, and just
yeah.
like speak my mind, like people like that more. And it's like refreshing because it's like most people that go up there and they do that kind of thing, they're like really scared.
Yeah.
They don't want to, I don't know. It's just a hard thing to, it's a hard thing to put yourself out there. So I try to like, everything is supposed to be in sync.
Yeah. To me, it's like also when I'm watching you, it doesn't feel like you're trying to be funny in your storytelling. It's just like a natural
yeah.
part of your delivery, you know, it's like an unintentional thing. So
well, that's good.
It doesn't
yeah.
come across as like super hacky or like maybe you telling a story a particular way that you've done over and over.
Yeah.
It feels like very in the moment. Like I remember that night you played this particular song where you were talking about you were like on a trip with a partner or
yeah, yeah.
some sort
yeah.
and like realizing that this relationship probably wasn't good
yeah.
and just like, yeah, your delivery surrounding that was really great. And then I get to hear you play the song.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I just love that stuff because it just gives, for me personally, I think I've talked about this a lot, is just gives me this additional thing to like
sure.
really latch onto.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't think it's always necessary. And I also don't think that it like necessarily destroys any mystery to the thing all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that that's a fine line, and it's funny because I listened to, you have this live set from maybe like over summer that's on YouTube.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I enjoyed listening to it a lot. I mean, I think it's this kind of cool like just room recording.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is
yeah.
nice because it's this raw recording, but you can still hear how good the songwriting
yeah.
is.
Yeah, shout out to Elliot and Soli of Chamberlain Gonzalez. That's another band in town that was at their house.
That was a show you did with Wellesley?
Yeah, yeah.
Jack's
yeah.
the homie.
Amazing set.
Yeah, love
yeah,
Jack.
Yeah.
And there were some moments there where you, again, did some storytelling, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And it provided some context for these songs that I've become familiar with.
Yeah.
That I've listened to, like, Pablo a bunch.
Yeah.
And then I heard that story. And,
yeah.
It just made me, appreciate your ability for storytelling through the lyrics.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's, is it as easy for you to form some kind of maybe fictional based song versus like something that is very like life experience? Or is it always kind of like a mix when you're writing?
Okay, well, okay, so all that story, a preemptive, like telling a little story about, that's all pretty new, like I would say in the last year. And I didn't like, I wrote Pablo, like, let's use Pablo as an example. Okay. Like I wrote that song, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago. And so I didn't have the like, he's a real guy. He didn't do all the stuff in the story. But I didn't write it thinking I was going to say all this stuff in the right. beginning. Or like there's like this one Danielle where, well, okay, we don't need to go that, but I'm realizing now, like playing all these, like it's usually solo sets when this works, so like where I can like people are way more into it when I tell the story ahead of time. But some of them don't have a story to them. They don't work. Like Sleepyhead, like I don't know what to, it's sort of there's like ideas there, but I'm kind of like, it's sort of like half subconscious, half conscious. So I don't like have stories for all of them.
Right.
And then it's now I'm kind of have this, it's a sort of a dangerous place. I mean, this is all new where I'm like, I'm writing new songs and I'm like feeling like I have to have a story a little bit or I have that itch a little bit. And I have to just say like, no, these are two separate things. The writing is like, you can write some with stories, you can write some without stories, but like, you don't need this to be your thing from now on.
That can't be like the focus of your song. Yeah. You can't cater to needing to tell stories.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Cause then it's not going to feel, I don't think it's going to feel as authentic.
Yeah. I think that like a good strategy to have is like, if you start to, Bob Dylan has a quote about this. I'm going to bring up Bob Dylan again, but who? He's like, if you start to like, I don't know what the quote exactly is, but he's like, if you know what you're doing, then like start doing something else. Like as soon as it becomes overly formulaic, that's bad. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that.
Absolutely.
So I have to kind of always be ducking and weaving.
Yeah.
If something gets too comfortable or like I'm this guy, I'm the guy who, the storytelling is working very well.
So you are enjoying when you get that space
to do
that sort of thing.
Right now I'm trying to figure out, I feel like the listening room, I'm calling it listening room, but you know, songwriter's thing where people are listening attentively and I'm playing alone. Like that's working really well as a live set. People are really stoked on it.
Yeah, it gives that, it's that additional like level of an engagement.
Yeah.
Know, to get to this opportunity to get to know you even through these like brief explanations of songs.
But in the rooms where you can't hear a pin drop and it's like where I can't it's not subtle. Like I have to like, particularly like with my band, like I have to figure out, I'm trying to figure out sort of like a two-prong strategy for like, okay, you have the listening room kind of style, and mm-hmm. I know how to win people over that way, but how do you do it in a band context? And that is like, you know, is it rocking? Does it have like a good groove? Am I that in that context I can rely more on like belting, like the athleticism of playing and that kind of thing. That's kind of my new puzzle I'm trying to figure out right now is like, how do I go into any room, any size, and capture people's attention? Because there's a lot of like, I've seen this before where like, there's like songwriters, they'll go to play a show and it's like the people are rude and it's loud and stuff.
They're trying to tell their stories at a brewery.
Yeah. Yeah. And they get like pissed. They're like, whatever they want the audience's attention and it's like the audience's attention is like driving. It's a privilege. It's not a right. You have to like, you have to earn it. You have to command it, and you have to have different tools in order to get their attention. And like, sometimes they're a little bit rowdier and wilder, and you have to like figure out how to reel them in. Yeah. I think.
But you're enjoying like the balance of having
the fun
like
part,
the different
yeah.
experiences too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what makes it. It wouldn't be fun if it wasn't hard, you know, yeah. So
but that's the big challenge right now is discerning
for
between,
live. Yeah. For live. I mean, there's all sorts of, there's challenges with recording is in, and writing is a whole different game in of itself. They're kind of two different worlds, I think.
Yeah. Going back to the actual like storytelling through the songs, maybe something like Pablo, like you were sure. talking about. So do you have you always found it to be something that just like works pretty well for you to blend these things, like real things that have happened or these real characters that have come into your life and maybe fabricating these stories a little bit? Like, has it always made sense for you to be able to tell fictional characters kind of stories as much as like your own life experiences?
Yeah, here's my philosophy on it. I think like if there's some truth to it,
yeah,
it just works better because life is some, you know, stranger than fiction, and it has that quality. But I usually have to sort of zhuzh them up in certain areas. So like Pablo is like a completely fictional story. It's like when I was writing it, I was like, I'm gonna do like a Rocky Raccoon type thing, but about my friend Pablo, because he's a real guy. He's from Neon, which is I say in the song, but that one is like very fictional. But then there's other ones that like, okay, Danielle.
Yeah.
Danielle is a song about me. I get a new phone number, like literally from the phone company, right? And they give me this young woman's old phone number, and then like guys start calling me in the middle of the night, and like debt collectors and stuff. So that is a true story. All that is true. Her name is really Danielle, but it happened to my mom. It didn't happen to me. So
beautiful.
So and when I used to introduce that song, I would go, this happened to my mom, and people were confused. And then my friends would be like, don't what? Just lie and just, say it was about
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
So I simplify the story a little bit to just to make it cleaner or more exciting. Like, I can't say like my mom got a new phone number, yeah, and Danielle. So
it feels less personal too.
And maybe. I don't have any obligation to tell the truth. They're stories.
That's the beauty of storytelling too. Is
yeah.
like a good storyteller fabricates the story.
Yeah, yeah. It's
a
the same
bit.
Thing with comedy. Like, they don't have. There's
right.
probably a kernel of truth in it, but yep. it's like augmented or tweaked. Same thing with like Marseille, like the one about when I got in a fight with an ex-partner in France. Like, I didn't storm off and take the morning train, like I said, but I embellished it and made it you made it more dramatic,
right?
So yeah.
Yeah. And I would imagine
so I'm living a lie.
You're living the life of a storyteller. Maybe,
yeah, yeah, sure.
Is what you're doing, you know? As far as the recording, like Genie Plus organ.
Yeah.
Are you doing most of this on your own?
That was everything with me.
Just like home recording.
Yeah, yeah, every instrument. And I had another guy master it, but.
That's another thing that you've just kind of picked up chops along the way because you wanted to be able to facilitate your own ideas and didn't really want to have other people in the room to be able to do that, or how did that
I think
happen?
I learned how to do it from recording drums with friends.
Okay.
Like, I learned like how to set up mics and like an interface, the basics.
Yeah.
And then I think it kind of actually started from like a negative place. Like, I kind of had a chip on my shoulder, like, I don't need anyone else. I can. And then it kind of turned into this thing of like, well, I don't know how to play bass, but like, I could bring my friend in and have him do it. But it sort of became the impetus for learning how to play all the instruments. So I'm like, well, if I like, this is what better way to learn it than to have to learn it.
Yeah.
Because I'm recording it. So that's kind of how the recording, playing all the instruments, I figured out how to do that. And then I had other guys mixing it. I'm also kind of like a control freak when it comes to this stuff. And like I would use one guy for one song and then try somebody else, and like it's mixing is fucking expensive. So I ended up just being like I'm gonna learn how to do this too. I'm gonna learn how to mix.
Yeah.
And like my mixes are not, they're not.
I mean, you're
they're,
right.
They're dude. Simple. I just try and keep it like super simple. But you know, it's not overly like mixed or produced. And I think that's like kind of the problem I have sometimes is like if you send it to a mixing engineer, they want to put their stamp on it.
Polish it up maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah, yeah. They want to put their signature on it too. And so like, it's the same thing with whatever, like playing bass or something. Like, somebody might want to be like, well, I'm playing bass on this song, so they might play a little busier. But like, because I'm not, it's all me.
Yeah.
My sections of my ego aren't competing with each other. It's just one guy that's like focused on the song as a whole.
Maybe some of your ideas are pretty like rudimentary because of like your ability to play these instruments too, so yeah. It's not getting in the way of like the song.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And now it's now, so I think it kind of started from a little bit of like a spiteful place of like I can do it all myself, but now I feel like I can try things without any, I'm not even saying like somebody in the room is going to go, that sucks or something, but like just having another brain in the room.
Yeah.
Like there's a, you're being judged whether it's like actively or passively.
It's so vulnerability. I have
no judgment. It's just me in the room.
Yeah.
You
can try as many ideas as you want without exhausting someone else too.
Yes. And that is, I mean, when you land on something like weird and exciting, it's like you feel like a kid again. I love that feeling.
Thinking about something weird and exciting.
Yeah.
Sleepyhead.
Uh-huh.
Is, I think I mentioned before, one of my favorite tracks of yours.
Uh-huh.
And I think that song is so great without the part that I'm going to mention, whether it's there or not. But
I think
that's,
I know where you're going with this.
That vocal sample or whatever that voicing, that
the chipmunk voice
yeah. It's like this sped up tape,
yeah
and that doesn't happen for like a little bit into the song,
yeah.
So I'm already all in on this song,
yeah,
and then that part hits,
yeah,
and it's so incredibly soulful and goofy at the same time,
yeah,
that I just think that like that's such an like a cool additional layer of depth to that song that I think brings out like so much character.
That is so sweet to hear because I have a story about that part.
Yeah. I want to know. I was curious how that came about.
Okay.
And like maybe how deep into the process of that song you already were before you decided to introduce that part.
So That's me singing on that.
Okay.
It's not like a sample from another song.
Also great work there.
Yeah.
Because
thanks.
It like just the aesthetic of it, the feel of it feels like you could have sampled that from a record and sped it up or something.
Yeah, yeah. So. It's kind of like that vibe. It's like when they do that in like hip hop a lot where they speed up a soul thing. It was one of those times where I was just like in the record, I was demoing. It wasn't even like I was doing the I'll do like a demo, like a rough draft of the song, and then I'll re-record every instrument better, right?
Yeah.
Just so I can like get ideas quickly, and I don't have to like be particular about mic placement and worry about that stuff. So I just did. I slowed it down to like Vera speeding in Logic, and then I sang it in my normal voice, and I didn't even know what the like. There's not actual lyrics. It's just sort of like gibberish. Like I was like, oh,
like you don't even remember what you.
No, it's kind of alluding to things, but no, it was off the cuff, right?
Yeah.
And I like loved it. And then later on, I was recording the final version of it, and I was like trying to copy the how I did it in the demo, and it like wasn't working. Like I was trying to make it words, and I'm like, I should just move the one from the demo over, which is what I ended up doing. But then here's the weird story, and this is why I love that you said that, because I put that song out as a single, and some guy, this guy who likes my music, who's like a YouTube kind of influencer guy, and he like makes his own playlist.
Okay.
And so he has fans and people comment on his videos. So he posts that song, and you know, and I'm reading the comments because I'm vain, and somebody said like, oh, I was like really into it, like until those chipmunk vocals came in, and then somebody else goes yeah, like what the hell? This would have been an instant hit if you you ruined the song. He's not talking to me. He's just anonymously, and it was so hurtful, like for like maybe 8 hours, but I just was like, I have to have tougher skin. I do have tougher skin even since then, but also you're right. Like, fuck those people. It's also like, nobody on the internet, there's going to be a lot of people that like, if you do anything that's not safe.
Yeah.
Or like unexpected, there's going to be those fucking haters.
Absolutely, dude. There's going to be people that comment about what records are up here.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not going to be anybody commenting, actually. But we'll hope. I'll actually hope.
I like it. It's a good spread. Like, you got Phil Collins' head.
He's my favorite.
Yeah.
My favorite of all time.
It's a good, it's peeking over the... Yeah, over
just,
the...
Just a quiet little peek from Phil. No, like I said, dude, I think that to me, that song was so good from the jump.
Yeah,
but that part to me made it extra special, because like,
dude, I'm so glad you say that, because that's how I felt about it when I recorded it, and then that guy on YouTube I was like, maybe I shouldn't have done it.
Well, because that's like, that's one of those moments where you made a choice, and to me that choice gives the thing more character than it ever would have had without it.
You know? Thanks, man. That really does mean a lot to me.
So, yeah. Fucking, I'm glad you took the risk on it. I'm glad that you stumbled upon it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that is, like, one of those cool things that you stumble upon when you are doing kind of everything by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that moment, you don't have that opportunity
My friends would have heckled me out of talking to me, like, what are you doing with that? No.
And I also, you know, it's not something, like, that you're overusing throughout like the rest of the record.
It's a one-time deal.
It's
a
one-time deal, and I think that's also what makes it cool. I think maybe it would have been cheesy if you tried it again somewhere else in the record, unless it was like a reference to that thing. What do you feel like the biggest challenges are to recording your own stuff? Like, do you feel like there's too much freedom sometimes, and that you don't know when to just like quit?
Not so much anymore, honestly. The hardest part about recording, getting good drum sounds. I'm like really into brutally editing. I want to keep it to the least amount of pieces as possible. Like, I don't want to add it, everything in there has to be, at least in theory, I'm not pulling this off 100% of the time, but everything that's in there, every piece has to make the sum of it better.
Yeah.
And like, if it's just sort of self-indulgent or extra, then like, it's just taking up space. So I like doing that, but I will, you know, I'll record more than I need and then strip it back. But yeah. I like all that stuff. All that stuff is really fun. The part that sucks is putting it out, honestly.
What about putting it out? Is it just like expecting some sort of response, or like, is it just, do you feel like that's the most vulnerable part of the thing, is that you're putting it out into the world and people can now comment on it and say that you're a fucking idiot for putting the chipmunk voice in?
Well, that stuff doesn't bother me as much anymore. I mean, I think the more that I put out, like my first song or my second song, you know, I get like less sensitive the more stuff I put out and the less I care. But no, I just don't, I don't know if you know when you put, you don't have to do any of this, and I kind of didn't do this for the album, but I did it for my singles. Like, you have to like submit to playlists and stuff. And these people are just like, half of them, like, they don't, they're just all day, they're just listening to 30 seconds of
people's jobs.
30 seconds of a song, and they go like, "I liked the vocals, but I didn't like the chord progression. I liked the," and it's just like, I don't like that stuff, and I don't put as much weight into it. I might still have to do it, but I don't like.
Yeah,
it doesn't bother me as much, but I hate that.
Yeah, is it also a thing of like? Is it hard for you maybe when one song like does really well and like maybe an expectation for the following songs to do as well, like on streaming where the numbers are so transparent? Maybe like Ruby Jean seems like it got
what the hell
tons
happened?
Of plays. Is that one of your first songs that you put out?
That was my second song, and it didn't do well like in the when it first came out,
and then, but it just got playlisted.
Now it's every it, no it's just on it's like the algorithm picked it up. I don't know,
that's amazing.
So it's just like radio, which is like complete bullshit, right? I don't know, like, so I think there's This is I'm gonna go on a little bit of a Spotify rant here. This is like a bad thing.
This episode is sponsored by Spotify. I'm just kidding. We just rep DistroKid around here.
I don't even have DistroKid. I kind of wish I did.
30% off with the link in my episode notes.
It's too late to switch. I'm on TuneCore, but they're all the same. I've thought about switching, but
DistroKid link is in the episode notes.
I'd like DistroKid, and if I could take it back, I would.
It's okay.
We'll is still, this really sponsored by
we're
DistroKid?
Still going to put your episode up, Mickey, but this episode is sponsored by DistroKid.
Is it? Is
and
it actually?
If you use the coupon code in the episode notes, you get 30% off first year of membership with DistroKid.
I still might switch. Is it actually? This is really sponsored.
For real.
Good for you.
DistroKid has been sponsoring this podcast for almost 3 years, which is absolutely incredible to me, and I could not be more grateful for their support.
That's incredible.
It's very rad.
You know what, DistroKid, if you're out there, if you're listening, I might...
DistroKid, Mr. DistroKid, Miss DistroKid.
Help Mickey Newball switch. Make the switch. Because it's more just laziness.
Hashtag
it's
Mickey
like changing
Newball
banks
switch.
Or something.
No,
just...
that totally makes sense. I don't have to deal with that. I'm not putting any music out.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I ride for DistroKid because they ride for me.
Dude, that's awesome. What the hell were we talking about? We're talking about...
Just the Spotify stuff and the algorithm...
Well, I think it's because I think Ruby Jean got picked up because it's like it kind of goes right into the song. It's not a slow boil. So I think like the algorithm, this is another thing. It's like homogenizing music a little bit, like, oh, if it slaps in the first 30 seconds, then like, so yeah. People are just trying to like, they're writing music for the algorithm.
But Sleepyhead slaps. From the get-go. So
yeah, but
why
we'll see,
are we not hitting?
Maybe in a year. Who knows?
When
who
the chip, when
is
the
it
chip,
AI?
When the chipmunk AI? Algorithm kicks in?
Yeah.
Like anything with this that hits
come.
This key
yeah.
will hit the algorithm.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. You know, some people... it's funny that that's your favorite one. Everyone has different favorite ones, which I love.
I mean, I love your songwriting, dude. But one, when I was... Maybe it's a thing of, you know, when you fall in love with a band and a lot of time it's that first record
that
hits
sure,
for you.
Sure.
Even if you like the records out, like the other records more, that first one holds a special place.
It's your gateway song.
Exactly. It's my gateway song. As far as making the Genie Plus Organ record, what did you enjoy about that process? It's your first... you know, full length record versus these singles that you had put out.
Yeah.
What do you feel like that experience was like versus doing the singles thing? Like, did you feel like there was this room for like longer form storytelling or like the art of putting together a collection of tunes versus just releasing these singles out into the world?
Well, to be honest, it was kind of like, it wasn't like I didn't like put it out like, oh, this is conceptual. And I'm not even sure if it's particularly cohesive. It's just sort of like what I had ready to go.
Yeah.
But what I did like about it was that when I was doing those singles, this kind of goes back to the submission thing and all this stuff is like when you do one song and then you have this like you're doing your own marketing and release stuff for it. it sort of like poisons the process a little bit.
Poisons
it,
the well.
Yeah. I was thinking about sorry. That. No, I was almost concerned.
I couldn't.
Yeah. It poisons the well. I hope
the drummer from that podcast from that band listens to that podcast. This podcast, I'm going to send it to him.
I think his name is Chris. I don't know what his last name is.
Chris, but if you're listening, Mickey became, you know, you changed the game for him.
Oh yeah.
You should hear the blast beats in Sleepyhead.
Oh my God. I wonder if they're still. Anyway, I think it was. It wears you down a little bit. So I could spend more time kind of in the laboratory just because I wasn't having to worry about releasing everything more. Yeah. Like that, like more unbroken focus.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, the flip side of that is like, it was like, do I add more songs? Like, I just want to get this out. And luckily I didn't sit on it for too long. I know people, you know, people do this. They like write an album and they spend like 10 years on it and they,
yeah.
So it took a long time, but I also was learning how to this. Now I learned how to do all this stuff. So the next one, you know, it's going to be a lot easier in terms of technical execution.
You've like streamlined a process for yourself
more or less. Yeah,
for sure.
Like I know how to record it now, and I, you know, I had to learn how to do all this stuff with that album, which was really fun.
Yeah,
with the singles I was self-recording, but I had somebody else mixing it.
Gotcha.
and I don't know, it was more piecemeal. I wasn't doing it as like all-encompassing as I do now.
For sure. Yeah. I, as far as the record, you know, it definitely like doesn't, I didn't like take away that it was something like conceptual necessarily. Yeah. Happening, but
yeah,
it does all feel like it like really lives together well. And it does feel, maybe because of your style of storytelling through the music, you know, it doesn't really feel like anything's tied to each other, but it just feels like this book that is several different stories.
Yeah.
You know, not a big cohesive thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, dude, it's impressive to me that you do all of this like pretty DIY, because it sounds so good. And like one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was maybe you won't have like a great answer for it, because I think it's probably a hard thing to like even put into practice, but uh-huh. When I listen to your music, it feels very timeless. And I know we talked about, like, you know, you're obviously like pretty heavily influenced from these things of a different era.
Sure.
And it comes across that way, but it doesn't feel like to me that you're trying to do that thing. Like it's just kind of happening. So do you feel like anything attributes to this sort of timeless sound? Because I feel like your music is the type of thing I feel like I can put on for a variety of people of different age ranges.
Yeah.
And I think that they would have a hard time placing when it came out.
Wow.
Like I think I could play this for my dad.
Yeah.
And he would fucking love it because it represents these artists that are, you know,
sure. Yeah.
60s, 70s stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that he would be able to place that it came out this year or last year.
Yeah. You know?
And and maybe the same for someone of our age.
Sure.
Like I think they would maybe have trouble placing it, except maybe, you know, you've got these like cool characteristics of maybe like these synthy feels or maybe the drum machine stuff here and there.
Yeah.
But even JJ Cale was using drum machine stuff back in the day.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I use one in my live set actually. I have like a drum machine from the 70s. But
Do you have any feelings of where that's coming from, or do you think that's just like your filter for what you wanted to put out, or what you do want to put out with this music you're making?
Yes, I think it's a filter thing, but I also think it's like, I think it's a healthy thing to not have too singular of like influences. You can sometimes you probably hear other musicians and you go like, oh, that person clearly loves Big Thief or something.
Yeah.
And it's like too derivative of it.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, I don't think, like, I don't know if it's ironic, but I think, I don't think I'm more authentic. I think it's just like, I think everyone is influenced by other people. It's not like you're just pulling it out of thin air, but it's the act of like pulling from enough stuff that it becomes your own. It's like taking a bunch of recipes,
mm-hmm.
and then you make your own soup. That's new ball soup.
Yeah.
And nothing like quite tastes like it. Some people go, oh, you sound like whatever. You sound like this, you sound like that. But like, I'm not just like copying someone else's recipe. So I think that's like a good trick for songwriting, because that's a myth that like people are just like, they're doing something completely new and pulling it out of thin air. It's like, no, they have maybe a unique overlap of influences.
Yeah.
That makes them different, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably like, and not overthinking it. Like, I'm not going like, I need this record to sound exactly like, whatever, John Lennon's Double Fantasy or something. Like, I'm like, if you try to you get it, templatize off something.
Yeah, for
like,
sure. I mean, I think that's even, I don't know if it's representative of like early episodes of this podcast or maybe like previous, you know, podcast experiments, but you know, there was definitely those early episodes, I'm sure I was trying to mimic someone, and now it's more like I'm definitely always absorbing what I'm listening to and maybe what I think prompts good conversation in other conversations that I'm listening to.
Yeah.
But it's a little less derivative of those things. Like, I feel like by now, nearly, you know, 8-9 years in, I've developed my own style. So like, do you feel like that's the growth in your songwriting? Like, maybe early on when you started your songwriting, maybe it was a little more reflective of like, oh, he's listening to a lot of this.
Absolutely.
Where like now when I listen to your music, I can tell maybe that you do appreciate a certain era of things, but I can't really pinpoint like, oh, he loves this band.
I mean, I think that's for any kind of art. Like, you start by copying, and then you eventually find yourself in that. But I mean, I get like, you know, friends of mine that speak, they don't have a filter when they talk to me. They go like, oh, you're ripping off the Beatles. And I'm like, whatever, man. But like, the Beatles are who I sound the most like, then like, fuck yeah. Because yeah, it's not like I'm not trying to be sneaky about it. Like, everyone knows the Beatles. If you listen to my music, I don't know if you hear it in there, but like, I don't think it sounds so Beatlesy, but that's an example of something that like I still would get to this day.
Yeah.
In the recordings, at least.
I mean, I just think that there's like a lot of feel to the recordings, and I think that's like the most important thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't think it's not something where I pinpoint, oh, he loves Rubber Soul, obviously, or something like that, you know?
But people love telling you what you sound like. They love that.
Yeah. I think it's because they want something to identify it with.
Yes, yes.
Right?
They want to anchor it to something they know. It's like, if it's something unfamiliar, people come up to me and they go, oh, you sound like Jim. You should do Jim Croce cover, Cat Stevens. Yeah. I'm like, I love both those guys, so.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not like I don't do that with musicians.
Yeah, yeah,
and a lot of times that is my gravitation towards someone.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Where it's like, oh, I love this record, and because I love that record, it gives me a similar feel, or like it feels it's in a similar spirit. I always love to pinpoint somebody into that, and then them tell me that they've never heard that record before, I think is always an interesting thing, because then it's, to me, just, oh, this is just your voice.
Yeah, there's a couple cases where, like, I got this maybe 2 or 3 times where people go like, oh, you remind me of Father John Misty. And I don't listen to Father John Misty at all. And I like don't want to listen to him. Just like, I'm like, well, I'm going to have to avoid that now because I don't want to, which is maybe a little bit insecure of me or something. But
yeah,
but
I think that I could understand that comparison.
Yeah.
But I don't I don't necessarily think it's about the sound. I think it's about your storytelling. Like I could, sure. I could maybe feel where that comes from. Or like you know, being a comedy fan, you hear comics talk about how they can't watch other comics because they don't want to like subconsciously take something from their act, or yeah. they don't want to like start voicing things like that. Like I can hear myself,
but I think that's an, I think if I'm being a, I'm going to be very, I think it's an instinct of weakness. Like I should be able to listen to anything, and I'm being honest here, but like, I don't think I should avoid something because, but I have that instinct yeah. of like, maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah. It's funny. I was telling you about that Neil Brennan Blocks podcast, which is one yeah, of my yeah. favorites right now. And I sent a particular clip of my podcast to a buddy who also listens to that and is like super familiar with Neil Brennan. And I was just like, dude, I did the thing. I'm adopting Neil Brennan's delivery, like in this particular chunk. And yeah. it's funny to hear it, but also, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. So it's all, at least also through my filter. And it was very unintentional yeah. that I delivered this particular line like this, but
interesting.
It's funny to like identify those things over time.
You're probably, and you're hyper aware of that, I think. Probably, you know, anyone else watching is probably not going to.
I mean, I think it's, yeah, I don't think anybody would ever recognize that thing.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, it's because I'm sitting here doing the editing to this podcast, and there's no, you know, maybe while you're making a song, you have these four instruments to pay attention to.
Sure, yeah.
While you're mixing it yeah. or editing, where I'm just listening to our voices while I'm putting this thing together. So yeah, it's definitely under like a magnifying yeah. glass for sure. But where do you, either from like when you first started exploring songwriting on your own, when you like stepped out from behind the drum kit and decided that you wanted to focus more on your own songwriting, or
yeah.
finding this autonomy that you like recognized in maybe other songwriters, to where you're at now with things, where do you feel like you see the most growth in your creative process or the songwriting, or just, you know, in general?
Well, I mean, I think I'm in a really good place right now. I have a lot of new songs that I'm starting to demo right now. So I like have a lot of good momentum, and I'm playing a lot of shows and having a lot of fun with my friends. I think I was talking to a friend on the phone the other day, and like, I think sometimes, like, this is really petty, but like sometimes when you have musician friends and they have some amount of success, you're almost like if you feel jealous, or you're like, oh, they're getting to the next level and I'm not there. So I don't feel that anymore. Like I feel excited for my friend's success, and I think that's like a good sign of like being on the right path with yourself. Like if yeah. you're not comparing, and you're not worried about, you're just like doing your own thing. And so that's where I'm at right now, and it's feeling really good, and it's a nice, I think like playing a lot of live shows it takes a lot of the pressure off recording because it's not everything to me right now. Like, and also recording while I'm doing live stuff takes a lot of the pressure off live. So I think that's a good thing, because it's like you can't just sit in front of a computer all day. You have to yeah. like interact with humans and see how your new songs do in the wild in front of real people and yeah. stuff. And so that's, striking that balance is good, I think.
Yeah, I think that's also maybe the dedication to the craft too, and like yeah, putting yeah. care into it. Like you were talking earlier about this accessibility just gives people the opportunity to just like put music out.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily have to be someone that's interested in playing live shows and developing as like a complete musician.
Yeah.
Where it seems like you want the whole thing. Like you want the live experience and you want the recording experience.
Yeah.
And you want to like figure out how those things like, you know, live together, or like how they inform one another too.
Yeah, it's like I think it's parallels with like your inner inner world inside your head and then how you interact with other people. I think maybe that's a bit like of a stretch, but like the recording, like being in your head and, like being comfortable with yourself and being creative and artistic with yourself. And then like the live thing is sort of like, how do you communicate with people outside and stuff? So that's like those, it's weird. It's like those pieces of my, of myself and my personality are, those are representations of that, the recording and the live. And like, if I can, the more that those reconcile and the more balanced those are, like the happier of a person I am, or the more content and balanced of a person I am. So I don't know. It's almost like a weird, slightly religious, spiritual thing a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm making this up as I go along, I think.
I don't know. It seems like you care about it on that level.
I
like,
care about it deeply. Yeah. It's really important to me. I mean, it's everything. It's like, I'm not, it is, it's like a very spiritual thing. It's my social thing. Like, it's like all my friends are musicians or people who care about music. So it's like everything. It's like what keeps me healthy. It keeps me driven. So,
yeah. And I think also what you were talking about, as far as moving past that point of maybe that jealousy that can kind of kick in when you see other success, like, dude, that's such a good place to be when you move past that. And that when those things more fuel the fire because you're excited for people instead of the jealous kind of like, maybe angst you have towards those things, like I think when you start using that stuff as fuel for the fire of like in a positive way, it puts you in such a better place, and like not feeling like you, oh, I deserve this also, like why is this happening? This is like, just be stoked for this person that you know that is like achieving this level of success or whatever is happening for them.
Yeah, I have a friend who I used to drum for a really long time, and I'm going to be doing a tour with him in May, and I'm opening the tour as Mickey Newball, and then I'm drumming for him like
still as Mickey Newball.
What's that?
You're still now, drumming.
I don't know if he's going to call me. That's Mickey not my Newball. Real name, by the way. But I won't.
That's for you to find on Reddit.
Yeah,
you can all go look up Mickey's real name.
So I used to drum for him for a long time, and he sent me his new album, which is not released, you know, like private thing to practice the drums. And it's beautiful. I love it. And it's really good. And just like what you said, it like fueled the, like I was so inspired by it, and just like listen to it over and over again, a couple times back to back a couple times. And then like, just like, I think I pumped out a couple songs like right after that. And it's just kick ass, and it just got me excited. Like you said, it lit the fire. And maybe me 5 years ago would have been like, fuck these.
It's like also that idea of, you know, I think over time you want to maybe bring an opener that is just as strong as you to like inspire you, instead of maybe bringing something that's like underwhelming
someone. Yeah. That's
not inspiring to me. Like, I don't want to see somebody that's not as good as you to compare it against this thing.
Sure.
That is much better.
Yeah.
You know, but where are you at with, you know, speaking of just like playing drums in your buddy's band for this tour, are you in a much different place now as far as like accepting those roles of getting the opportunity to just play drums? And like, do you appreciate it on such a different level now that you do have your own outlet for your own music?
You hit the nail on the head. I don't even have, I know I
got, that's it folks, that's Mickey Newball.
I just got congas like maybe 2 months ago, and I mean, drums are still a pain in the ass to haul, that's the one thing. And I'm getting and you know, they're set up in my room where I record, so it's like I like every time I got to break them down, and it's not good for the drum set, even if you have cases and stuff. But so I like to, the congas are my favorite, and I play bass in my friend Elliot's band, Elliot OK. Check him out. He plays in my band, and I play in his band. We've been playing for over 15 years probably now. So, you said it. It's like, I appreciate it a lot more. It's so much fun. I actually kind of like, so I like the songwriting things where I'm playing solo, but right now I like playing in the band context. I like being a supporting member more than like the guy up there. It's this weird thing. It's like, now that I'm not a drummer, like, I don't like that my back's turned to my friend. It's weird. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I would always like hate that as a drummer. Like, I'm just looking at the singer's back. And now I kind of like, I have to get used to that role, or kind of like find my character in that role or something. Because you're glued to this microphone. It's easy on a drum set, but when you can't dance around, because you always gotta go back to the mic. And so it's kind of a,
yeah, maybe it's even, you know, when doing the full band stuff for yourself, it's about that stage plot even, and making it more of a setting where it's like in the round and the drummer's like off to the side
or
something.
Totally.
Obviously, I know that you can't always do that with other stage plots that you have to consider, but maybe it's even as simple as that, of like creating a space where it feels good to you and you're not back turned.
That's a big piece of it. Yeah, for sure. I like the kind of horseshoe sort of layout or something like that. But yeah, I like to be able to make eye contact with every member, you know,
for sure.
If they make a mistake, I go, find them. Just joking. I'm the one making the most mistakes.
Right on, man. Well, dude, I love your songwriting, and I'm glad that I got this
opportunity. I like your podcast, man. I love your podcast.
Thanks.
I enjoy it. This is the only one I've experience so far, but now I can go back and watch.
I'm glad that I've gotten the opportunity to like sit and hang with you and talk. Like I said, I just think that you're so much of your personality comes through in the music, and
thank you.
It felt like you already felt like a familiar person out of the handful of DMs that I've had with you over the last like month ago or like month or so of trying to set this thing up. So I don't know. You just felt like,
nice. I'm glad.
Familiar.
I
to
feel
me
the
is.
Same way about you, Dan.
Sweet. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
You feel good about this?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Awesome. We're going to play the episode out with Danielle, since we talked about that
one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Mickey, we end every episode of the podcast with the guest saying the tagline for the show.
Okay.
Which is, it's a program.
Okay.
It means absolutely nothing.
And I say it like the program?
Yeah. You say it fucked up. You
like
don't.
Pilgrim?
Yeah. You don't say. Yes.
Okay.
You don't say program. You say program. It's just the way that my grandfather says the word program. For some reason, he says program if he's talking about the news. Oh, put on the news program. Record the football program
for
me.
Where did he grow up?
He grew up in California.
Oh.
Also, sometime in Colorado. I don't think it's a regional thing. It seems to be this generational thing. It's genetic. Yeah. But it's just like a really goofy way.
Okay.
To end each episode.
Do you want me to look at the camera?
I mean, I guess this is like a new element of it. You can. This is the one time I will say, go ahead and look into the program. Look into the camera, and you can deliver it however you would like.
It's a program.
He nailed it, everybody. That's Mickey Newball. All the links for Mickey will be in the episode notes. Search Reddit for his real name and identification.
What? No, don't do that. Is that a thing?
I don't know, man. I don't even know what a Zamboni does properly. Geez. I couldn't even explain that. I can't explain to you how Reddit works. Well, all the links will be in the episode notes, so you can find the music from Mickey Newball. It's available wherever you stream music. Is there anything else that you want to shout out before we sell this thing?
When is
this
coming out? So I can promote shows, but you know what? Just
I'll leave that for the intro.
Yeah. No. Yeah. We can.
I'll do an intro and post, and I'll shout out any shows that you got that are relevant.
Okay.
But definitely check out the tunes. Love the music. Genie Plus Organ is the full length record that you can check out from Mickey Newball, and we're gonna play it out with the first track from that record.
Yeah.
It's called Danielle, and that's the Jelly Jams, and we will catch you on the flip side, Portland or wherever you are listening from. We did it.
Nice. Danielle. I gotta say, these chairs are really comfortable.
A little too comfortable?
No, I got bad back.
No, I love these chairs.
Where did you get
them? These chairs are amazing. Shout out to our other sponsor, Mickey, IKEA.
Are you serious?
Is the other? No, that'd be incredible if I was just getting free Swedish meatballs every time I went to IKEA. No, they are IKEA chairs. They're the Poangs.
I like it.
P-O-A-N-G. I found these matching ones on Craigslist.